Thank you for being here today. We're in the second week of a new series that we started last week called Be Rich. And if you missed last week, you missed a lot. And so I want to review some of that. And you can go back on our podcast and listen to some of this. But we began by sharing some good news and some bad news. Anybody remember what the good news is? We're rich. We're rich. And some of you are saying, well, I don't feel rich, and that's because you missed last week. Because we talked about the fact that if you make $33,000 a year or more, that you're in the top 1% of the wage earners in the world. You're in the 1% club. And so some of you, you're rich. Some of you are mega rich. If you have a combined household income of $80,000 a year or more, you're in the top one-tenth of that 1% of wage earners around the world. And the bottom line that we took away from that is that God has given us more than we need. And so therefore, we are extremely blessed. That's the good news. The bad news, anybody remember the bad news? You're rich. You're rich. And that's not a typo, and we meant to say that. The bad news is that we are rich, and we have some rich people problems. Just practical things like not able to get our hair appointment when we want it. Jeff, sometimes they put a pickle on our Chick-fil-A sandwich, and that just ticks us off, right? And so, and you know, sometimes the cell service in our house isn't good in one particular area of our house. And so we have rich people problems. There are also some rich people challenges that we deal with. We talked about three of them last week, and some of the challenges spiritually that we have because we're rich, is that we're so blessed that it's harder for us to depend on God. It's easier to put our hope and our trust in what we have than it is to trust in God. Secondly, we talked about how our wealth can distract us from what our true priorities should be. Because we've been so blessed with more than most, we have many opportunities that can take us away from the best things that God would have us be a part of. The third thing we said is we realize that because God has blessed us, that we have a tremendous responsibility. God has given us more than most people in the world, and because He's given us so much, He expects more from us. And the truth is, so many people don't really understand that. So many people think that the more that they have is for them, and they're deceived into thinking that the money can satisfy that what they're searching for. Will bring impact and meaning in their life. And so what I want to do today is kind of continue to build on the idea of what we're talking about and talk about the deceitfulness of riches. The deceitfulness of riches. And this is actually something that Jesus talked about one time when he used a story. Jesus used to speak in parables to prove a fact or to make a point. And so he was talking about this farmer that went out and sowed seed. And the Bible says that some of the seed fell on good soil, some fell on bad soil, hard soil. Some of the seeds fell and the birds came down and picked them up. Some of the seed went in and the plants began to grow. But then Jesus talked about how the deceitfulness of riches choked out the growth. And it's a metaphor to illustrate how the riches of this world can choke out our spiritual growth, which leads to our key thought today. The key thought is this. If you have it in your notes, it should be there. The key thought is the world wants you to serve money or what it can give instead of God. The world's message is to go after possessions, to go after wealth instead of God. And so Jesus identified the problem with that in Matthew 6:24. He said that no one can serve two masters. For you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. And then he made this statement. He said, you cannot serve both God and money. Notice that he didn't say, you cannot serve both God and power, or God and popularity, or even God and the devil. He says, you cannot serve both God and money. And I believe he specified God and money because he knew that so many people, maybe so many of us, would they knew that money and possessions or the promise of what money could bring would be a number one competitor for our hearts. The truth is that money is an attractive false god. A false god is anything that we put our hope and trust in instead of God. And so some of it's academic. Some of it's maybe a relationship that you put ahead of God. A lot of people put it into money or what money and possessions, what it says, what money promises it can bring. Specifically, there's two promises that money makes. Number one, money promises happiness, that if you have enough of it, that you'll be happy. And secondly, it promises security, that if your stack is big enough. And I ordered this off of Amazon. I need to read a little bit closer because I thought it was life-size money. And so it was small. I started to print some, but I didn't want to get thrown in jail for printing money. But I wanted to give us an idea, just a picture of a stack. That it promises security, that if your stack is big enough, then you'll finally be secure. And probably all of us at some point in our life have thought that. We've thought, in fact, how many of you thought, if I just had a little bit more money, if I just had this certain car, if I just had this house, fill in the blank, I wouldn't have to worry, I would feel secure. I remember in my 20s, I was kind of always a car guy. My first car was a Chrysler that my dad gave me, but when I started working at the grocery store, I bought my first car. It was a 68 GTO, and it's, by the grace of God, I didn't kill myself in that car. It was really fast. But then I graduated high school, and I had my eyes set on a 1976 Cutlass Supreme. And I knew that if I had a 76 Cutlass Supreme, that I'd be cool, and the girls would notice, and it would make me happy. And so I bought it. I drove that for a year until I saw a 1977 white Chevrolet Caprice Landau Coupe. I thought it was one. And so I traded in, lost all kinds of money, traded in, and bought the 77 Chevrolet Caprice Landau Coupe. And I bought it and drove it for a year until I got my eyes on a 1978 Cadillac Coupe de Ville. Yeah, I'm telling you. Drove it off the showroom floor in Houston, Texas. I had an afro out to here. I was cool as all get out. Thought it'd bring happiness. And so I bought it and it drove it for a while. And after 18 months or 2 years, had somebody show up. You've heard the story before if you've been here in the last 13 years. You heard about 100 times. But had a bank official and a policeman show up at my door and say, "Mr. Roy, you're 3 months behind on your payments," and they repossessed that car. Now, I don't know what it is for you. Mine, it was cars. Maybe if some of you ladies, you might be thinking, if I just had those shoes, that would totally make my outfit complete. If I had a bigger house, if Chip and Joanna Gaines would redo my house, then I would be happy. Guys, it's more technical stuff. If I had the latest iPhone or Xbox or Chiefs season tickets, then everything would be happy. Everything would be awesome. If only I had stacks of cash, then I'd be happy and secure. But the reality is it doesn't matter how much you have. You can get more and more and better, and it still won't be enough. You'll still pursue more and more and better. And the truth of the matter is that only Jesus can give you the lasting joy that you're searching after. The other promise money makes is that if I have just enough money, then I'd feel secure. I could pay off my debt or double my salary. If I could pay off my debt and double my salary, I'd feel secure. But you can have all the money in the world and have someone that you love get sick or someone you love walk out on you. And very quickly you can realize that money cannot buy your way out of that. Suddenly you realize that security is not found in what money can bring. Money promises only what only God can give. The world says to pursue and serve money instead of God. And most of us would say that we would never serve money. But the truth is if you ever bought something you didn't need with money you didn't have, you're under the power of money. If you ever bought something thinking that this was the thing, this is the thing that's finally going to bring meaningful, meaning, meaning in my life and happiness, then you're under the power of money. If you ever compromised your integrity and cheated on an expense report, you're under the illusion that more is going to bring more meaning. If you ever neglected your family trying to earn more money, then I would argue that you're under the power of money. And it's a false god. It's promising something that only God can provide. Last week, we began a passage that's going to kind of be the key passage for us as we walk through this series. It was in 1 Timothy 6, and it's Paul speaking to a young pastor by the name of Timothy, and he's kind of coaching his way, coaching this young pastor on how to help some of the rich people in his church. And in verse 17, he says, command those who are rich. And we acknowledged last week, takeaway, we're kind of in that group. We're rich. Remember, we already talked about that. We're one percenters. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant. And here's the part that we're going to focus on today. Nor to put their hope in wealth, which is uncertain. But instead to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Tell those rich people, don't be trusting, don't be putting your hope into the wealth, which is uncertain, but instead put your hope in God. Then he says, verse 18, command them to do good, to be rich. And then identifies three ways that we're to be rich. And the first one, he says, good deeds. To be generous, to be willing to share. I was out getting the leaves out of my front yard. We live in a cul-de-sac, and we're right dead center in the bottom of the cul-de-sac, and I have two widow ladies on either side of my house that have really big oak trees. And so at some point every year, their leaves end up in my yard. And so I started, yesterday's a pretty nice day, and so I started, got the leaf blower out, and I was blowing the leaves and kind of I blow everything out in the street, then I mulch it up really big, then I catch it, and then I dump it in the back. And so I'm getting there, and I'm beginning to clean my little wedge right there, you know, I'm over on this side of my driveway, and I'm blowing it, kind of boner stuff back in her yard over there, and then I remember this verse. Well, God says, hey, rich people, be rich in good deeds. Let me just stop right here. If you have a widow, if you have a single person in your life, single woman in your life, they ought to be at the top of your list. In fact, there's scripture, there's a theme throughout scripture where they identify the widow, the fatherless, and the alien. All throughout scripture, from Genesis to the end of it, they identify that those are groups of people that we are to care for. So if you have a widow in your life, they ought to be at the top of your list. Be rich in good deeds. Be generous. Be willing to share. And if you were here last week, our main takeaway was this, that God has blessed me with more than I need, and I'm rich. Say that with me. God has blessed me with more than I need, and I'm rich. And we're going to add to that this morning, I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provide. Say that with me all together. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. Therefore, I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Now, the truth is that most of us believe that, or at least we want to believe that. The problem is that money continues to speak to us. It continues to scream out to us that if you have more of me, you'll be happy. If you have more of me, you'll be secure. If you have more of me, you'll feel significant. And at least I know in my life, there have been times when I've bought into that lie. There have been times in my life when I've trusted in what money promised, what possessions said they would do in my life. I've bought into that, and there's some indicators. I want to give you three this morning, and like me, if you'll kind of, as we go through the list, see if any of this is true in your life. The first one, if you're taking notes, is people who love and trust money, number one, never have enough. They never have enough. People that whose trust, who believe that money and possessions is going to be the thing that brings meaning in my life, will never have enough. If you're asked, are you satisfied with your income? Most of you would say, no, not really. I could use a little more. Remember last week we said those that made 30,000, they define rich as being twice, be 60,000. If you made 50,000, it'd be 100,000. If you're subscribed to Money Magazine, that we talked about that, and the average income of those that subscribe to Money Magazine is $2.5 million, and you see the same principle played out. They said that rich would be $5 million. It's always twice of what we have. And to some extent, that's an indication that we love and trust money. When we're asked, do you make enough? Are you satisfied with your car? We're sitting there, no, I enjoy heated seats this time of the year. I mean, Solomon said this in Ecclesiastes 5:10 that kind of backs this up in black and white. He said, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. If you're finding it hard to be content, if you're always wanting more, I can promise you it doesn't matter what you get or how big your stack of money is, you're still going to want more. And according to Solomon, if you love and trust money, it doesn't matter how much you get, you'll never have enough. You'll always want more. We talked about last week how being rich is always a moving target. It's always more. We get what we think. In fact, some of you 10 years ago, you're making more money than probably what your parents ever thought about making. And 10 years ago, you thought, man, if I could only make that amount. And I wasn't happy back then. And we 10 years later, we're making that amount, and we're still as unhappy as we were before. It's the deceitfulness of riches. It promises something it can never deliver. Proverbs 18:11 says, the rich think of their wealth as a strong defense. That they think that if I get enough of this, that bad things aren't going to happen, or that I can buy it away. If I have insurance, I have an IRA, I have this or that that I think I'm going to lean on, and that's going to help me make it. That they think their wealth is a strong defense, and they imagine it to be a wall of safety. They think that if my stack is big enough, that they'll be happy and secure, but it's simply not true. It's the deceitfulness of riches. People who love and trust money, number one, never have enough. Number two, they find it increasingly difficult to give big. They find it increasingly difficult to give big. And I know that there's some of you who would love to give big, who would love to tithe, but you don't feel like you can afford it. You know what the Bible has to say about giving and about being generous and how it blesses us and others when we are obedient to that. You believe in what God is doing through this church and other churches, and you would like to support that, but you feel like you can't afford it. You know what it feels like when you're at that restaurant and you're talking with that single mom who's working two or three jobs just to try to make it, make ends meet. And you know there's that tugging of, because you kind of built a relationship with them. You kind of down deep, you say, man, I really wish I could help them out. I wish I could, give them more of a tip or help them pay their rent. But you don't think you could afford it. Because in your mind, you don't have enough. Your stack isn't big enough. And what's interesting is it's been proven over and over again that on average, the wealthier people are, the smaller percentage they give. Statistically speaking, people in the medium income bracket in the United States, that's around $50,000, that they give about 6% of their income to charities, which isn't that bad. And if median earners manage to be that generous, it would make sense that people that are wealthier than that would give away greater percentages of their money. I mean, isn't that right? Doesn't that make sense? This means yes. Yeah. But it's not the case. In fact, the study said that when you look at earners that are in the $200,000 bracket, their level of giving drops down from 6% to 4%. And in fact, it's proven the fact that the richer people get, the smaller percentage of money they give away. And actually, they've discovered that the people that give the greatest percentage of their money away to help other people, to charities, are people that make $12,000 or less. They give a greater percentage. And obviously, there are exceptions to that, but on average, it's been proven again and again that the bigger the stack, the smaller the percentage people give. And it's that's not how to be a good rich person, and that's not how to honor God. That is just the opposite. That's how to be selfish and to be bad at being rich. When it comes to giving, apparently Jesus didn't care about as much of the amount as he did about the percentage or about the heart. And in Mark 12, that one day Jesus was sitting outside the temple and he was observing as people would come up and they would put their money in an offering box there. And they talk about there's a lot of rich people that day that they came in and they were just kind of putting their money in there. They were putting big stacks of cash in that bucket. And then all of a sudden a lady came up to him next time, a poor widow lady who had nothing, and she came up to the box and put in two copper coins that weren't even worth the value of a penny. He turned his disciples and he said that woman right there gave more. I know the other people gave more in total, but that woman gave more than what the others gave. The rich may have given more in the amount, but apparently Jesus was impressed by the percentage. She gave everything that she had. She gave it all. And it was an indication of where her heart was, that she wasn't trusting in her stack. She was trusting in the one who richly provides. She was totally dependent on him. And even in her poverty, she gave. Here's the deal, church. We are incredibly blessed. God's looking at our hearts. And he's looking to see how generous that we're going to be with what he has given us. And for some of us, we need to stop making excuses of why we give so little. And I'm not saying that to make you feel bad or to make you feel guilty, because guilt rarely results in positive behavior. I don't want you to feel bad or make you feel guilty. I just want us to remember how blessed we are, and I want us to be grateful. And here's why. Because great things flow out of a heart of gratitude. So we need to stop making excuses. It's why we don't, quit saying, I'll give when I get a raise. I'm going to give when I get the car that I want or the house I want, or my kids through college, and I'll begin to give. That needs to change. It needs to change where I'm going to give now because I am blessed now. And you may not be able to give the percentage that you want to give, but start somewhere. Here's the deal. Don't hear what I'm not saying here. I'm not talking about giving to our church. I mean, I've only been a pastor as long as I've been at this church, for 13 years. Up till that time, I was 20-something years as a youth pastor or associate pastor. And I watched some pastors that I served under manipulate people when it came to giving. Things would get a little bit tight around the church, and so they had pressure on people to give. I just want you to know, our bills are paid and we have money in the bank here. I'm not trying to smooth you so we can get a stack of money. Here's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to unleash in you. Number one, I want you to see how blessed you are, and I want you to get on being generous with what God has given you. I want us to be a church that really believes that it's more blessed to give than to receive. That if we give, that God will be faithful to give us more to give away. We talked about this 2 or 3 years ago. And in fact, there's one Sunday where we gave every family $20. And we said, at the end of the service, we gave every family $20. And we said, before you leave the parking lot, go out there and you pray, God, show me where I can help somebody with this today. This week, God, just show it to me. And we just use it as seed money. And some of you doubled it. Some of you tripled it. And some of what it did in our hearts is it made us. In fact, I heard one guy, David Patterson, who's in Home Depot all the time, because that's his business. He said, Dan, when I began to walk in Home Depot, it changed the way I looked at people. He said, I'd walk in there to give just what I needed, but God wouldn't let me do that. I began to see the needs of others. And so we sowed some seed into that, and God did a work in our heart. And that year, because I said, if we will be faithful in giving what God has given, if we be faithful in being generous with what God has given us, God says in His Word that He will give us more to give away. And that year, our church brought in around $100,000 more than what our budget was that year. And He's been faithful ever since then, that He's given us more. And He doesn't want us just to build a bank account with that. He wants us to do something with it. In fact, I'm just going to tell you, I told you last week that one of the challenges I'm going to get through this is what we're going to do as a church, and this is going to be an annual thing. There's some churches that have been doing this for a decade now or over, and it gets bigger and bigger and every year. Here's what we're going to do. The Sunday before Christmas, we're going to take an offering that day. And we're going to take an offering on Christmas Eve. And I used to not want to take an offering on Christmas Eve because there's so many guests that come in here. But here's a stipulation of what we're going to do. We're going to, whatever we take in those 2 days, we're giving 100% of it away. We're identifying ministries right now that are helping people in the city that aren't even a church, but they help people out, and we're going to help fund some of those organizations. We're going to give it away, 100% of it. Here's the deal. We've already established the fact that we're all blessed, right? Did we say that? We're all blessed. We've been given more than we need. So here's the deal. I want 100% involvement in that. All of us can get some. Parents, begin working with your kids and just say, hey, whatever you want to get, your piggy bank, whatever. Let's bring it in and let's see what God wants to do in that. I'm just so excited about that. I want to see what God does in and through us in that. And I want to build on that every year. I want to, because I'm confident of the fact that our generous, good God wants us to be generous, good people. And He wants us to bless others. But you're not going to be able to be a part of that ongoing thing if your trust is in possessions and in money. You'll never have enough. You'll continue to make excuses as to why you can't give. And third, you may have money in the bank, but no peace in your heart. You said, me say, Dan, you know, technically I don't have a lot of money in my bank. Maybe one of the reasons is because you bought big toys and they're in your garage. Or you've got so many clothes in your closet, you can't, if you change clothes 3 or 4 times a day, you wouldn't wear all of them. We're blessed. And if having that consumes you, if that's consuming you, if that is your focus, you can have a lot of that stuff, but no peace in your heart. And in Proverbs 15:16, Solomon shared a great principle that has the potential to change how we do life. He says this, he says, better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth of turmoil. Better a little bit with a lot of God than a lot of stuff with no God. I read an article not too long ago of a man who managed, he was a financial planner, and specifically he worked with very wealthy, extremely wealthy people, and he worked with them in order to try to help with them, work with them to get a plan where they could pass their wealth down and it would have an effect from generation to generation. And the guy that was, the article said that this man talked about how having that much wealth wasn't always a good thing. That sometimes that the challenges outweighed the blessings. Specifically, he said it's almost impossible for rich people to get it right. And he asked, somebody asked him, would you ask if he would want that kind of wealth that your clients have? Would you want that? And he says, not in a million years. I absolutely would not want that kind of wealth. I don't know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking right now, he said, well, give it to me. I mean, threaten me with bliss. I can handle it. I mean, you hear about the people that say, man, if I win the lottery, that's gonna solve every problem I have. But most of the time, it's just the opposite. In fact, what I hear a lot about is people say, I wish I'd have never won the lottery, it ruined my life. It ruined my family. But we think we're the exception. And It reveals the fact that we really don't believe that better with a little than the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. The truth of the matter is we need to get this issue of money right in our lives, because as we already talked about, it has the potential to derail our lives. I mean, some of us got stories of how it derailed our life. I've been using a repossessed car story for about 40 years now. It about derailed my life. And so we need to get this right. We need to begin to order our lives in such a way when God whispers that you need to give that person something, we're ready to do that. That we've freed up, instead of using the more for us, we've set some margin in our lives to where we have some more to give. And to stop believing the lie that we can't afford it. But the truth of the matter is we pretty much can afford what we want to invest in, right? I mean, we buy $8 mocha laka waka things from Starbucks. I mean, give me a small, medium, a large. Get all that other stuff. I mean, just tell me. We spend money what we want. And the way we spend money, I mean, follow the trail. Follow the trail. Follow the trail where your money goes, and that's where your heart is. Ouch. God says from Paul to Timothy, tell those rich people to be good at being rich. Don't put your faith in money. It can move in a New York minute. You can lose it. And we saw that back in 2007, 2008. Your IRA can drop just like that. Your house can be wiped off the face of the earth with a good storm. Don't be arrogant. Don't put your trust in wealth. Trust in God. Rich people, be good in good deeds. Those people that sometimes you kind of think of them as nuisances in your life, God's put them there, and He has a plan to use you to bless them, to encourage them, to help them. Hey, rich people, be generous with what you have. Recognize that I've given it to you. I've given it to you. And I'm going to use it in a way to when you give it, when you're obedient in that, they're actually going to look past you and they're going to see the God you serve. And they're going to say, there must be something about that God that they serve, because if they can move that person to do something like that, to be willing to help me out, that says something about their God. Don't you want to be a part of that? In the first service, a man came up to me and just an opportunity that he had one time, and he said, I wasn't able to give to it, but my teenage daughter came up to me and said there was a need that was there. My teenage daughter says, hey, the next time you see that person, I want you to give them this money. Doesn't it feel good when you help others? That's why it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. Let's be a part of God's plan. Let's see what God can do. I want you to begin to pray right now that God, whatever you, I mean, help us. We may need to sell something so we can have something to give on that Sunday. We're going to give it away. And I believe God's going to be honored and blessed. You want to be a part of stuff like that? I do too. Would you stand to your feet? Stand to your feet. Head bowed, eyes closed. God, we sang a song that said, God, you're so much more than I could ever hope for. God, a lot of us sing that song, but it's not really a reality. The truth of the matter is we have a blank that we say, God, if I just had this, then that would give me something really worth living. It'd bring meaning in my life. God, so many of us are holding on to stuff that we don't have. God, help us to find our value. Help us to find our security, our meaning in life, just in knowing you. so much more we could ask from God. So God, would you work on our hearts? God, that area of stinginess that we all kind of deal with, that selfishness that where we kind of think that the more is just for us. God, help us to see, help us to recognize that you're the giver of all good things. And Timothy says, you're the giver of everything we have for us to enjoy. And so that, I'm not saying we need to be poor people. I'm just reminding us that you've given us more that we can bless others with. So help us to be good, rich people. Help us to be rich in what matters most. And all God's people said.